Time to take a look at aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests today, Lori Tyne-Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW Medical School. Glad to have them along and certainly happy to have you listening in. Give us a call if you've got something ailing you, or maybe it's a training issue that you might want to have a little advice about. We would be more than happy to help out at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call with your questions and comments. Lori, welcome back.
It is good to be back.
Yeah, Bill, good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be back as well on this sweltery day.
Exactly. In the throes of summer.
Yeah.
We're
swimming, biking, running, sailing, kayaking.
Lots of stuff to do.
It's the time of the year where it's not so much aches and pains, but people have to be careful of the heat. Exercising during the day, choosing your time of the day. I mean, heat exhaustion, heat stroke can be a major, major problem this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of outside our usual discussion of aches and pains, but in terms of the season, it's a big thing to watch, be careful for.
And there's a couple issues about hydration. One is that your body actually can't absorb as much water as you lose on a hot day. So people think, well, I'm drinking and drinking and drinking, I'm staying ahead of it, but your body can't absorb it. And the flip side of that is you can actually hyperhydrate, where you cause problems on the other side of the coin by being too hydrated. Now, I don't want people to say, oh, I shouldn't drink water because Lori said this, but you have to be careful not to dilute yourself so bad that you dilute out all the essential chemicals that you need, you know, your potassium, things like that for motor function.
Right.
Well, when it's that hot, you know, it was, Saturday, I guess it was Saturday afternoon. It's probably 94, 95 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and daughter, Emily, went to a birthday party for a little friend. So, okay, I'll jump on the bike and ride around the lake. It's 13, 12 miles or so. It's not a big ride, but you know what? I was, about 10 miles in, I'm thinking, man, it's warm out.
Yeah.
And I was flagging a little bit.
Well, being selective at the time, if you have a choice, you know, try not to exercise aerobically outdoors, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon, the peak of the heat is a high risk time.
And you also have to think about the radiant heat. I mean, people think about the heat from the sun shining down on them. But if you live in the city, there's a significant amount of heat that's retained in the pavement.
Right.
So anyone who sat on that warm pavement, and that lasts for some time after, even after the air seems to cool down, the ground is still real warm and there's a lot of radiant heat. So just keep that in mind.
Well, I did drink a lot of water. I didn't overdrink, but I drank a lot.
Good
Evelyn,
for you.
Evelyn and Racine. Hi, Evelyn. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. I am calling with a knee problem, which is probably a classic one. About 4 years ago, I had arthroscopic surgery on my right knee for torn meniscus. And I went the route with the cortisone injections and so on, which helped for several years, and last year I did the round of injections with the hyaluronic acid, which did help. But, you know, there still is discomfort in the knee, and I know I am bone on bone, especially toward the inner part of the knee, and I've been seeing a rheumatologist, who I'm going to see this week, and just wondering if I need to have these injections again. I'm trying to avoid surgery for as long as possible. One other question is what is your opinion about the knee insert rather than do a knee replacement?
You mean the resurfacing?
No, it's called a Unispacer.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are still relatively new. So, I think anything that you can do to delay having a total knee replacement is useful. So, if you are bone on bone, you've lost your meniscus, something like a Unispacer might be a good alternative for you. And one of the important things about some of those procedures is you really need to stay in contact with the medical system.
Mm-hmm.
And because for some of these procedures, there's a window of when they will be useful for you. You can get to a point where you're no longer a candidate for some of those surgical procedures.
Okay.
So you're feeling bad. You've got this knee where you've lost your meniscus. You don't want to have a total knee replacement, but you should have some regular contact with the surgeon who might ultimately operate on your knee so you can keep abreast of what's new, such as the unispacers mm-hmm. or some of the other procedures. You know, the Synvisc, you know, for some people that's still relatively new. But again, there's a window of time where that'll work for some people. It gets too bad. It's not going to help you much. So just making that regular contact with your physician and determining when is the right time for you to have something like that done is useful.
Right. I've seen my x-rays and the knee, actually, the meniscus is not totally gone, but it is the inner side that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Evelyn, have you seen a physical therapist along the way?
After I had the arthroscopic surgery way back. Okay. I do go to, I work out 3 times a week for about an hour and a half, but avoid the treadmill.
Mm-hmm. You know, if it's truly bone on bone, the prognosis may be guarded in terms of how much help a physical therapist can provide you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, seeing a physical therapist, even for a couple of visits, to examine not only your knee but all the way down to your foot and ankle, mm-hmm. there may be some specific strengthening you need to do or specific flexibility you need to do, or they can help guide you in terms of footwear and your exercise program to make sure you're not loading that knee excessively.
Right.
Might be able to help at least delay degeneration and maybe it'll help symptomatically to a degree as well.
There's also some braces that are useful for the knee, and also there's some research that shows that some certain foot inserts can change the mechanics at your knee and might be able to offload that degenerative compartment a little bit, enough, again, to buy you some more time.
With the doctor I'm seeing on Friday and who I've been seeing for the Synvisc injections is a rheumatologist. And he's pretty much, and with me as far as avoiding surgery as long as possible.
Yeah.
And so I have gotten the brace and, use that. But I find it extremely cumbersome. And
that's the unloader brace?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a few different models of that. So if that model isn't working, you might talk with the physician or the orthotist, whoever fit you with that, and see if there's a different brand that has that's going to suit you a little better.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Okay, well, I may try the physical therapy router for a few visits and
see what happens.
The insert to the, would that be in the shoe?
In the shoe, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, so they should be examining all the way down to your foot and ankle as well to see what they can do to unload that knee and help with alignment issues.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Well, I thank you very much.
Thanks for
good
calling.
Luck.
Mike in Waukesha, your turn now. Hi, Mike.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good
thank
morning.
Thank you for taking my call. About 2 or 3 months ago, this is another knee problem. My left knee started to stiffen up after I would be sitting for a while. And if I went walking, it would feel okay. But then again, if I would sit down for any length of time and stand up and try to walk again, it would feel stiff. And I noticed that when I go down into a crouch position, I can't get down there with my left knee because it just doesn't seem to want to bend far enough, when I get down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is something I should go see a doctor about? I don't really know what's brought it on, and
I don't understand. So you didn't have any injury or previous injury to that knee?
No.
Do you notice any swelling?
Not really, no.
Okay. The symptoms sound degenerative in nature, whether it's your joint surface or your meniscus, or maybe you've got a little meniscal tear, although usually you have an injury that brings that on. But typically what blocks your motion is you try to go down into a squat when it feels like there's just something in the way.
Right.
Most of the time you're looking at a torn meniscus, and a piece of that meniscus gets caught in your joint.
Okay.
So if you go down and you said you felt pain, then that'd be something different. There'd be a couple other possibilities. But when you go down, it feels like there's something just blocking your motion. We
right.
think meniscus. So I would go in and have somebody take a look at it and see if they can figure out what's going on, because those symptoms sound like something needs to be addressed in your mm-hmm. knee.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling. Mary in Manitowoc, it's your turn now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a possible, I'm thinking, sciatic nerve problem, and it's on the right-hand side, and it bothers my back, of course, somewhat, but really in the shin and in the bottom, you know, the stretchy part of the bottom of the foot by the arch and the heel and stuff, and between the hip and the calf of the, not the calf, but the shin of your foot, I have no problem. But the shin, especially, and the hip are really beginning to be painful. And is this something that, you know, is there a certain exercise I can do or a stretchy thing or something that I can relieve some of that without, you know, having to have, you know, big medical bill expense because of
right.
something that I could alleviate just by exercise.
Mary, a couple questions for you. How long have you had the symptoms down in your shin and your foot?
Probably a year-ish, maybe around a year.
Okay. And was there an injury or an accident back then that you can look back and say this
no,
is what triggered it off?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. And you mentioned your low back. Does it seem to be a connection that when your foot and shin are worse, your back is worse?
I guess maybe I shouldn't say my back, because it really doesn't even seem to be my back. It's just like where the sciatic nerve area is.
Okay.
And so, and then it just travels down, and, you know, sometimes the leg gets numb. Yeah. If I'm sitting down or something for a while, or laying, it's terrible. But when I'm up and moving around, I don't have as much problem with it.
Okay.
I'm thinking that maybe some kind of stretchy exercise or something might help.
Well, if it is nerve, and it does sound that at least part of this is nerve-related, you can easily overstretch a nerve. A nerve that's irritated actually doesn't like to be stretched very much. And so there are certain exercises that are designed to get pain out of the leg and up toward the back. And that's what has to happen first. And then, so generally, as a general rule, the further down the leg or into the foot the pain or numbness goes, the more irritated the nerve is. So there is a series of specific exercises designed just to do that, to get the symptoms out of the leg. It'd be impossible for me to describe them really over the air like this.
Uh-huh.
The fact that it's been going on for a year means that time by itself probably isn't going to take care of this for you. It's not unusual for people to have back pain and a little bit of leg pain for short periods of time, but you know, a year, if time was going to be enough for you, you'd be better by now.
Okay.
You mentioned just right leg. Is there any symptoms in your left leg?
No, not at all.
Okay. And any other symptoms anywhere else that you've had within the last year?
Nothing that I could pinpoint, you know, that would seem related to that area,
okay.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, my recommendation would be is to see a physical therapist, and they'll be able to tell you within a visit or two how much they can help, and do you need any other type of testing in addition to what a physical therapist can do. But the goal of the program should be to get the symptoms out of that lower leg and foot first.
Yeah.
And there's a specific series of exercises and positioning activities that we incorporate to do just that, and that's what I would recommend.
Okay, so like going out walking in the treadmill, sometimes, I mean, it just burns badly, stop doing that maybe? Or
well, I would, yes. Anything okay. that increases the symptoms below that knee and into the foot, what your body's telling you is that you're aggravating things.
Okay.
And that's where a physical therapist can help guide you. I'm sure there are some things you can do for exercise, there's other things you should probably stop for a while,
uh-huh.
and they can help kind of coach you and guide you through that process.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today as we talk physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our physical therapists, Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault from the University of Wisconsin, our guests today Give us a call if you have a question. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We've been dealing with a lot of knees today, but hey, there are other parts of the body too that we can spend a little bit of time with. But, well, let's stay with knees for a while. Amanda in Madison, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I do have a problem with my knee that I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
But I also have sciatic nerve pain problems. I'm 32 and have a lot of injuries related to sports. And one thing, just in case this might help somebody, that helps me with my sciatic nerve pain that starts the sciatic nerve and goes down my hip and down to my back, my leg, is doing the hamstring pull strength machine. And the more I strengthen and use the strength stretch, not just pure stretching, but stretching it while strengthening helps a lot.
Oh.
With that, I don't know if that would help anyone else, but so in relation to my knee, I have two problems. One, I have a partially torn ACL that happened about 4 years ago, and they don't, you know, they can't tell quite how torn it is. I have good stability, and so the doctor had said try to avoid surgery and just strengthen it and see if you can function that way. But I really am missing playing sports. As I said, I'm only 32, and I don't want to lose the rest of my years with that.
Right.
And I just don't feel it's quite strong enough. But I wanted your opinion on whether whatever they do, I think they take a piece of the hamstring or something.
Right.
If that's really going to be comparable or stronger than what I am right now. And then the second thing is, as an alternative, I was trying to train for a triathlon, and I'm having trouble with the biking portion of it when I, not when I'm pushing down, but when I pull back, it hurts the inside of the knee, and I don't know if that's because the ACL isn't there, that it's straining the rest of the tendons, or if there's any, if it just sounds like there's a connection or not at all. And then the second question has to do with if I run straight, I have pain on the outside of my knee, which is, I believe is the IT band, and I don't know what I would be able to do for that.
Wow. Let's see if I can keep that all straight. So that there was the biking, and then there was the running.
Answer.
Yeah. That was lateral, and the other one was medial. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So the in terms of the stability in the ACL reconstruction, if your knee is stable, as your physician says, it's unlikely that the surgery is going to make you markedly better. So, yeah, there are people who have complete ACL tears who do just fine. In fact, it really breaks out pretty closely to a third. A third do just fine with no ACL and really no change in what they do. There's a third that need to modify their activities, and then there's a third who need to be reconstructed. Since you still have part of your ACL, chances are that you're going to do fine.
I'm probably in the middle, but I would have to reorganize my activities, but I'm not really, I really want to be able to get back and play soccer or basketball or any other sort of sport.
Well, have you?
But you're saying it just when a reconstructed knee wouldn't be any stronger than what I have now, you think?
Well, I can't say that, but I don't think it'd be worth the downside of the surgery at this point. Have you gone to therapy?
I did for quite a while afterwards, and I know how to move, and I know. But, you know, my hips are strong, and I've done all that.
And do you have a brace for your knee?
No, he wasn't in favor. This is Dr. Graf. You know, top surgeon in Madison. He does not agree with the brace because he believes you become dependent on it and don't learn how to move properly.
Well, I would agree, since I work with Dr. Graf, I better agree, that a stabilizing brace is, you don't need a stabilizing brace. But if you want to go back to soccer and things like that, it would be reasonable to use a knee sleeve. Because research has shown that contact of the sleeve in your skin helps tell your brain where your knee is in space. So it doesn't provide really any stability to your knee at all, but it provides a tactile cue that tells your brain where you are in space that allows you to activate the right muscles that you trained so hard to get strong. So
I'm pretty always, and that's the other annoying part, is I'm constantly conscious while running around of where I am in space and being in a solid athletic position and whatever.
Okay.
But when I, after, like if I play basketball for a while, after maybe 5 to 10 minutes, it starts to hurt inside of the knee.
Okay.
So I don't know if I'm really, if that's, again, stretching the tendons or it's just not holding it together well.
Okay. What's the status of your meniscus? Did you injure the meniscus or anything else at the time?
No,
you tore your ACL?
No, fine.
Okay.
Everything else is fine.
Okay. Did they do an MRI?
Yes.
Did you have a bone bruise?
No.
Okay.
It's just the ACL.
Okay. All right. Because you could, at the time of the injury, sometimes there's an impaction stress that causes some damage to your articular cartilage on your knee that sometimes shows up on an MRI, may or may not even be discussed with you. It's hard to say. In terms of the pain on the inside of your knee and the outside of your knee, I'd have to say it's really hard to say without a look at your gait. So, sure, your iliotibial band on the outside, yes, that can be easily overloaded in running. It's a very common problem in runners. Is your IT band working hard to help stabilize your knee? Possibly. Are your hamstring tendons on the medial side of your knee working really hard when you're biking to stabilize your knee or while you're playing basketball? Could be. The research has shown over and over again changes in kinetics and kinematics, that is how you move and how you activate your muscles after you've torn your ACL, much more in females than in males. So all of it could be related to having torn your ACL. Will those things improve with an ACL reconstruction? Nobody can say. So it might be useful to go back and meet with a PT again, because you're at a different place than you were right after your injury. Your rehab at that time was focused on, you know, kind of getting you over your injury, getting you back in that first phase. Now you've accomplished all that. Now you're at a different place in your training. So it may be good to go in and see somebody for a couple visits to re-examine you, to see how you move, to see how you bike, to see how you run, have them look at your running shoes and see if they can help you where you're at now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura in Baraboo, it is your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi there. I am suffering what I call Summerfest me.
Boy, I can speculate, but I'm not going to. Right.
I went to Summerfest about the middle of last week and did a lot of walking, a lot of standing for the concerts and in between the concerts. And when I stand, I tend to lock my knees as well. Mm-hmm. So my right knee, since then, if I sit, just sit, not doing anything, when I stand up again, really super stiff, little painful to walk on. Mm-hmm. After I get going a little bit, then it's fine. Mm-hmm. And if I'm just kind of suspending it in the air and swinging it back and forth, a little bit of popping going
mm-hmm.
on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
I just don't know what to do about that.
What kind of shoes were you wearing?
I was wearing Teva sandals.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Well, the most likely culprit is some patellofemoral symptoms. For people who tend to stand in hyperextension, you don't use your quadricep muscles very effectively. It's a really bad position for your knee. So everyone out there, unlock your knees, stand with your knees straight, but not hyperextended. And then when you sit for a long period of time, then you get that a pain underneath your kneecap and you get up and it's stiff and it kind of goes,
as you
start to get going again. So what I'd do, I'd ice, I'd stretch my hamstrings, I'd stretch my quadriceps, I'd lay on my back and do some leg lifts and some quadricep setting exercises. I'd do a little bit of wall slides down to about 45 degrees, but mostly hitting the icing and stretching. And if it's not better in a couple weeks, go see somebody. But just a little bit of stretching, some gentle strengthening, making sure you're wearing good supportive shoes. And when you sit, try to sit with your leg a little bit straighter and your knee not so bent, and try to move it occasionally while you're sitting. But if it's not better in a couple weeks, go in and see somebody. You might need a little bit more help getting over it.
Okay, good.
Okay, great.
Thanks for calling, Laura. And on to Pat and Rudolph. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm really glad this is on today. I am sitting here in a wheelchair. I broke my fibula in two places on June 18th.
Ouch.
And, well, it doesn't hurt at all. I'm in my second cast, and I've never broken anything before. I'm going to be 68 in a couple of weeks, and I'm wondering what I'm going to be able to expect as far as improvement goes when I'm through with the casts and everything, and what I can do to maximize my return to normality.
You bet. Pat, before breaking your fibula, how active were you?
Pretty active. No heavy running or anything, but
walking,
a lot of walking.
And
I climb stairs. We have dogs and just kind of normal activity.
Okay. All right. And how did you break your leg?
Oh, I fell down a little 2-inch step.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't take very much. It happens very
shoes
fast.
Shoes were too flat or something on the bottom, and I wasn't looking where I was going.
Okay. All right. And when do you go back for your next check to see the doctor?
Let's see. I just got my second cast, and I will be going back next week, I guess, for a walking cast, I think.
Yeah, you bet. Great. You bet. Yeah, so it sounds like you're right on schedule in terms of healing and recovery. And it sounds like you should recover just fine. Once the walking cast is taken off and you're walking without any cast at all, you'll have some soreness and stiffness just from using those muscles a little differently and your walking pattern be a little bit different. And if you're not walking normally, I would guess within, 2, 3, 4 weeks maximum once the last cast is taken off, then it might be worthwhile seeing a physical therapist to examine your foot and ankle, examine your knee. Sometimes when you fracture that bone on the outside of your lower leg, you can injure your ankle a little bit. And sometimes a little bit of rehabilitation to the foot and ankle area can help take care of that last 10 to 15% that you need to be able to walk normally. But it sounds like you're right on schedule at this point in time.
Okay.
Yeah, you should be able to get back to pretty much everything you were doing before. The good news is the fibula is not a weight-bearing bone. The other bone in your shin is the big weight-bearing bone. Yeah. So it serves mostly for muscle attachments and to help stabilize your ankle joint. So as Bill said, if your ankle is giving you trouble, see somebody.
Yep. Good luck. Thank you, Pat.
Great. Thank you.
And let's take some more calls. George in Wausau, your turn now. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about what a friend of mine suggested was some hip tendonitis. And I was traveling overseas, did a bit of walking sightseeing, and came back with some general soreness in my hips, both sides. About vacation was 3 months ago. Took some ibuprofen, and it's slowly seeming to get better, but... any day I'm on it, walking quite a bit, the pain and soreness returns. And I'm just curious if there's anything, again, in terms of exercise or can't really ice that joint. It's too deep. But if there's anything I could be doing, bicycling seems to be fine. It's just walking or on the Nordic track that bothers the joints again.
George, the pain's on both sides, both hips?
Correct.
Is it in the same spot on both hips?
Yes.
Okay. And is it on the outside of your hip, in front of your hip, deep in the buttock area?
No, I would say I would feel that it's from the front. Really what I would feel like was right at the joint.
Okay. Kind of right in the groin area in the joint there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it could simply be just a combination of, one, lots of sitting as you traveled, and then lots of the hiking and walking, that combination that sets you up for this to occur. And it could be a little bit of tendonitis, a little bit of bursitis. It could be a little bit of joint stiffness, just from the hip joints being used in the ways that I mentioned. The fact that biking is you can do without any problem at all for exercise, I would try to focus on that. If you've got access to a pool, maybe doing some swimming, and just lay off the Nordic track and the walking for exercise for a while. And give yourself maybe 4 to 6 weeks more recovery time. I would do some gentle stretching around your hip in terms of your quadriceps and your hamstrings, maybe before and after your exercise activity. It should be within 2 to 4 weeks. If you can't say that you're any better than you are now, then I would go in and get examined. And you can have a physical therapist take a look at you, and they should also look at your back. It sounds like most likely it makes sense that it would be your hips, but if it's in the same spot on both legs, one of the other possibilities, it could maybe be coming associated with your low back area as well. But if it's your low back, again, the biking and swimming generally should be good things for that area as well.
You know, if it is a tendonitis, when you stretch, as Bill suggested, the muscles in the front of your hip or the outsides of your hip, you should feel it in that same place when you stretch them if it's a tendonitis. If you can go through stretching and you don't really feel, it doesn't reproduce that pain, then it's unlikely that it's a tendonitis.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck, George. Thanks a lot for calling. And we'll take some more calls. If you want to join in, by the way, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Sarah in Arcadia, you are next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Thank you. In the last several months, I've had both of my knees have been hurting, specifically in the medial side of both of my knees, especially when I'm getting up from a down position or getting up from a chair or a couch. And sometimes even at night, I feel like almost, I don't know what restless leg syndrome is, but my knees just seem to just ache. And I had it checked out about 5 years ago when I had it just in one leg when I was finishing up in vet school in Madison, and they couldn't find anything on MRIs or anything, any other x-ray. And in that time, it was my right knee. It hurt the worst when I would be walking down a steps, and it doesn't quite feel like that now. I don't know if it's all, at all related, but it just seems to be steadily getting worse, and I don't want it to steadily get worse. If there's something, exercise or some specific person I should see, I want to get help for it.
Sure.
So you've had no injury to your knees?
No, I'm a very active, you know, large animal veterinarian, and I am not doing anything specifically, you know, the same thing over and over again.
Okay.
In my work. No injury really to my knees in my work at all.
Okay, and when you say the medial side, is it, you know, very medial along the joint line, or is it more anterior and medial?
It's more to the top medial, more towards the kneecap medial.
Okay, all right.
Like the area about the, you know, the size of a lemon.
Okay, all right. That could be patellofemoral pain.
Okay.
And that's fairly typical of having pain when you get up from a chair or you go down the stairs, things like that.
Okay.
So I'd probably go in and see somebody. There are a lot of different causes of patellofemoral pain. Some people get it from trauma where they have an actual inflammation on the under surface of their kneecap. Some people have hypermobility and the kneecap doesn't track well. Some people have hypomobility. They're too stiff and they don't track well. Those people need stretching. The people who have hypermobility need stabilization or stabilization taping or bracing. Some people have a postural fault where they biomechanically their hips are internally rotated, their feet are excessively pronated. It creates a relative rotational dysfunction at your kneecap that's corrected with orthotics and hip strengthening. So the point in all that discussion is to tell you that there's not one simple answer for the treatment of patellofemoral pain, but you have to figure out why you have patellofemoral pain and treat that. So I'd go in and see somebody. It's bothering you enough. You're a large animal vet. You're going to be carrying stuff. You have to deal with big animals. I'd go in and see a PT and have them do a good exam and get you on the right track for treatment.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Yep,
thanks a lot for calling. Linda in Camp Lake, you're next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you. I had called in quite a while back. I had a talus bone fracture that didn't heal up properly. And I had given up running and things like that. And I called in, and the advice I got was to go get it checked out before I hit a crisis point.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, I was ready for a crisis point. I didn't know I had a big bone fracture. I had a big bone lesion.
Oh.
So, oh, really? Oh, an osteochondral lesion?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know he just said it was a bone lesion. He said
okay.
It was about the size of a quarter.
Oh.
So, big enough for the talus.
Oh, yeah. So. That's plenty big. What are they doing about it?
They did the surgery. I got an ankle reconstruction, and today I ran 2 miles.
Oh, good for you.
Oh,
I have goosebumps. That's great. Good for you. Oh, well, that's fantastic. Thanks for letting us know.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
That's right. That's right.
That was great. Thanks, Linda. All right. Some good news there. Let's find out what's on Dave's mind. Dave in Beach Park, Illinois. You're next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I was just calling. I've had plantar fascia for the last probably two and a half years,
mm-hmm.
and I've done everything. Mm-hmm. I'm currently seeing a doctor, Dr. Wild Jr., out of Gurnee. Mm-hmm. Actually, he's out of Libertyville. And he did surgery on me last year for a – I had a tear in my plantar fascia.
Mm-hmm.
They did a tarsal tunnel. It was a nerve injury.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Since then, I have not gotten any relief. It's actually either the same. I've lost, feeling in my toes. And I also have the plantar fascia still there on both sides. He's got me currently on medicine Lyrica for the nerve.
Okay.
And
for the nerve pain?
Yeah. And Celebrex for the anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
Got the shoe implants for
right.
my feet, the soft
right.
ones.
Right.
Different shoes, everything, and I'm on my feet a lot. I'm a technician.
Okay.
So I'm on my feet quite a bit every day. I'm just wondering if there's something else that we're overlooking. I've had MRIs done, nerve tests done, thousands of dollars been put into this, and I'm getting nowhere. If I sit for a long period of time, when I get up, I can hardly walk. First, when I get out of bed, first thing in the morning, I feel like I'm 75 years old, and I'm very, very active. I coach a softball team, and we're on the road quite a bit, and, I'm on my feet a lot. So.
Sure. And that's the plantar fasciitis that's giving you those symptoms?
Yeah.
And what's the tarsal tunnel? I kind of missed that part. He did surgery for tarsal tunnel?
Yeah, they did. I had an entrapped nerve.
That
tarsal tunnel, it was an entrapped nerve. I think it was due to the fact where the plantar fascia, my right foot was, I had a tear.
I had
a complete tear. They were doing the injections, the cortisone injections.
Uh-huh.
And obviously I felt like I was better than I really was.
Oh,
and I was still
okay.
being active. And I tore my right side. There was a tear in my plantar
wow.
fascia. Well, it actually
okay.
healed and it thickened.
A right and healed with scar and then it entrapped the nerve.
Yeah. So
wow.
Now my foot feels bigger in the shoe.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've lost my arch on that foot because it feels completely different. It almost feels like my toe, even though their shoe size is the same, my toe is touching the end of the shoe on one side and not the other. And
Right. Because you don't have your arch anymore.
Right.
Have you used the night splint?
They've given me that. I haven't gotten much relief from that either.
Yeah.
I'd have to use them on both sides because I still get it on, both sides.
Right.
So I do the stretching. I do what they ask me to do, and I'm still not getting anywhere. Is there another doctor that you would recommend?
Well, I think it's always useful in complicated cases to seek another opinion.
Right, and that's where I'm at now. I'd like to.
Yeah. It's my bias, and I'll say it up front, is I think it's always useful to go to a large research institution because
mm-hmm.
that's where you have the people who are doing the research, the people who are reading the research, the people who are training the students who are, they have to really be abreast on all the current stuff. So
right.
So I think it's useful to seek a second opinion, especially in a case as complicated as yours. You have
mm-hmm.
a lot going on.
Dave, when you've seen a physical therapist in the past,
oh, yeah.
correct?
Yeah, they've got. I'm going next week, or actually this week. I'm actually going into. It's not work hardening, but it's basically sports therapist.
Okay.
They want to do soft tissue muscle.
Okay.
They want to do that. And
that all sounds good.
Do a little bit of work hardening stuff. To try and get the core, my core. And I'm not
mm-hmm.
overweight. I'm probably maybe 10, 15 pounds overweight. It's not, because
mm-hmm.
I asked him, I said, do you think that I should lose 25 pounds? Would that help? And he said, if I told you to, he says, I would probably actually be lying to you. He goes, I don't really think it's a weight issue. I just
right.
think,
mm-hmm.
it's
I think the soft tissue mobilization, the really deep, if you haven't had some really deep massage done, as painful as it'll be in the beginning, That went through my mind. And also exercises that are called neuromobilization, where you gently mobilize the nerves that may be scarred down a bit in that foot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where the soft tissue mobilization of the foot and up into the calf and lower leg as well. And then followed by specific stretches called neuromobilization would be a combination along with the other things that you just talked about. To see if some of that scar tissue can be loosened up and just get things moving in there as well as possible.
Right. Well, I guess my next question is there a phone number that I can either call myself to get to one of these other doctors, or else have him maybe consult with another doctor?
If you're willing to leave your phone number or email address, I'd be glad to contact you. I've got some contacts in the between Chicago and the Wisconsin border area.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to give you some names. And if they can't help you directly, they would know who to recommend for you.
Okay. Because he's a top surgeon, you know, for foot and ankle. His father is very well known, Dr. Weil Sr. And then he's followed in his father's footsteps.
Yeah,
so it's a second generation. Yeah. And they're very good at what they do. But, you know, he's definitely struggling with this. You know, he said that, you know, he doesn't understand why we're not getting anywhere. And, you know, he said, I'm one of the very few patients where, you know, that hasn't had very, you know,
good success.
Limited success or none at all. Now, the one thing that did help, they gave me a Medrol dose pack.
Uh-huh.
And my symptoms went away completely.
Yeah. Well,
I was actually fine for like 3 weeks.
Huh. Isn't that interesting? Well, that shows that there's a strong inflammatory component to it.
You know, but they can't keep me on that because of the
steroid
situation.
No. So then the question is, why are you continuing to be inflamed?
I haven't. Well,
so that's, I mean, there's some kind of mechanical problem, most likely, because it's unlikely to be systemic. It's only your foot.
Right.
There's some sort of mechanical problem that's causing you to perpetuate this inflammation. And the longer the inflammation is around, you get actual changes in the tissue that make it worse and make it harder to get rid of. So somebody's got to sort out the mechanical source of that inflammation.
Good luck. Thanks very much.
Tough problem. But, you know, I team treat too. I have no problem if when I'm struggling with a patient, I say, see somebody else, let a fresh pair of eyes take a look at you. Someone who can look at you in a different way than I have for the past 6 months and see what
Why
they
not?
Can offer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good luck, Dave. Thank you very much for calling. And Nellie in Rusk County will turn to you next. Hi, Nellie.
Hi, Larry. I won't go into my history of ailments, which are extensive because you don't want to use up your time, but I have very little mobility from my knees on down. I have no cartilage left in my knees. And I have always depended on my upper body to see me through. Well, about 3 weeks ago, I decided to spade up my garden so I could sow some beans. And I did something to my lower back right down my sacroiliac. And I know that there isn't much anybody can do except give you painkillers and rest. And I'm already taking Diclofenac twice a day, so I didn't even bother to call my physician. But Saturday morning, I went to see a chiropractor, and I've got another appointment tomorrow. And I want to ask, will there be any harm done by going to this?
Well, not if they examine you properly. And
they did take x-rays.
Yeah. There's no matter where you go and whatever's done to you, there is always risk involved, whether you're given an exercise or someone adjusts or manipulates your back or somebody puts a hot pack on you. It's just a matter if you feel that you were examined appropriately and as they're treating you, if it feels comfortable as you're put in certain positions and you're stretched and moved in certain ways, that generally you're going to be just fine. Having a little bit of soreness after treatment of any type is normal for maybe a day, maybe 2 days. So as long as you're not experiencing any pain that's sharp or pain that starts moving into your legs, you can assume that what's being done is just fine for you. Lots should be able to be done for you. I would also hope that you're be given some exercises to help increase flexibility in your back, as well as increase flexibility around your hips, as well as some strengthening exercises should be part of your program as well. Because you should recover from this, but then you don't want it to come back again.
Well, I do stretching exercises every morning in bed, and I know there's some nerve pain, but it doesn't go down into my legs. It radiates to the left side of my back, and the two things that hurt the most are standing and rolling over in bed.
Okay. All right. Well, in terms of how to roll in bed, I think one of the things I teach people how to roll in bed to keep their back from twisting. Uh-huh. And there are some ways to do that just to help you get through this recovery phase. The fact that it's been 3 weeks ago, are you better now than you were 2 weeks ago?
Well, I don't have the spasms. Okay. When I lay flat in my back in bed and stretch my legs out straight, I was having some spasms in my lower back. And they're not as bad, although I noticed this morning when I was stretching out that there was some muscle twitching, but generally speaking, right now I'm sitting on a low seat with my feet flat on the floor and my knees splayed and my elbows on my knees, and that's the most comfortable position I can get
right,
in.
Right. Well, the fact you're getting better, I would like to think within another 2 to 3 weeks, so 4 to 6 weeks after the garden injury, you should be back to 75% to 80% recovered. If you're not, then you might want to consider going for someone else for yet another opinion.
Well, my biggest problem is I'm 70 miles from specialists.
Yeah.
And, I'd have to depend on some kind of public transportation, which there isn't much. But thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to make it worse by going to this woman.
Yeah. Okay, well, good luck with this, Nellie.
Thanks, Nellie. Thank you very much for calling. And we'll take some more calls here. Mike in Two Rivers, hello to you.
Hi. Well, I used to be a triathlon guy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last couple of years, I had a office job. In the last few years, I've had factory jobs where I'm on my feet all the time. And my most recent job, I'm working in a welding department, and I had to wear steel-toed boots with metal tarsal covers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say within the last year, my feet have gotten so sore that I can hardly, like David said, you can hardly stand up in the morning. Mm. And my right foot is more sore than my left foot, and I have very pronounced arches.
Mm. Okay.
Have you seen anybody?
I've bailed out of my regular family doctor, and I found another very active general practitioner.
Okay.
So that's the Wednesday this week, and
okay.
Then he's really sports minded. So that's why I searched him out.
Perfect.
And then, from there, I guess, but, one of my friends actually had to have his ankles fused together.
Is the pain in your ankles or in the bottom of your feet? Or
my left foot has a large callus on it that I'm trying to take off now, right between the two center toes.
Okay.
And that foot is not nearly as sore as my right foot. My right foot, if you drew a line down from your front ankle shin,
right
down to the bottom of your foot, right before the ball of my heel, that's where that one is so sore.
Okay.
And let's see, on my left foot, by the end of the night, most nights, that's all I can do to take my shoe off as the arch support brushes against the bottom of my foot.
Okay.
Okay.
So you have a high arch. Boy, there's...
Yeah, I would say that the arch on my foot from the ball of my toes and the bottom of my heel up to the top of my arch is at least 3/4 of an inch.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll have to have somebody take a look at your feet. People's arches change from when they're weight-bearing to non-weight-bearing, so looking at that transition of how much your arch flattens as you put weight on it,
uh-huh.
as well as what happens to the rest of your foot is really important. I'd take your boots along mm-hmm. to show to your physician so he or she can see how you're weight bearing. People who tend to have a high arch tend to have a stiffer foot that absorbs less shock, and so they have a different set of problems than the people who are excessively flat footed, like it sounds like David did, who had plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
Although you can get plantar fasciitis for a different reason. It also sounds like the pain between your metatarsal heads, you could have a little neuroma there. And that could be because of your shoe wear or because of your weight-bearing mechanics.
Okay.
So all that being said, it sounds like you have fairly complicated feet, two different feet, two different problems, it sounds like.
Could it just be, one is subconsciously shifting the weight from one side to the other to listen to...
It could be. It also could be. And people are not symmetrical side to side. You could very well have two different problems. You may have a leg length difference that causes one foot to mechanically work one way and the other foot to work the other way. So all that being said, it means you need to see a PT who really knows feet.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So see somebody who's going to look at your feet, going to look at your knees, going to look at your hips, and take a look at the whole postural thing in weight-bearing and not weight-bearing,
right,
as well as when you're moving, walking on a treadmill, and in your usual posture at work in your work boots.
Now, if I might add, when I most of my adulthood, I wore some sort of Western boot to work, you know, a dress boot,
uh-huh,
a Western boot, so it kicked up my heel higher.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the boots that, you know, I wear at work don't have that high heel.
Yeah. That again, that could have changed if you have a shortened Achilles because you've been wearing those kind of boots most of your life. Then when you made that change, it could have really stirred everything up. So, it's a lot of information. It's a lot of stuff to look at. You really need somebody to sit down and sort it all out
and
find out a solution for you.
All right. Well, I guess I'll just have to wait till Wednesday.
Yeah, wait until Wednesday, but then make sure you get in to see a PT and see a PT that really knows foot and ankle.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for
all right.
Your time.
Yeah, thanks.
You bet.
Thanks.
Good luck, Mike.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. So in terms of training, people really do specialize in feet and ankles, and others specialize in other...
They do. Well, in the big picture, in physical therapy, you can become board certified in a specialty, or just like a physician can be board certified in orthopedic surgery or board certified in family practice. You can get board certified in specialty areas in PT. And again, like physicians, you can also subspecialize. Like there are orthopedic surgeons who subspecialize in sports or subspecialize in trauma. In orthopedics and sports, you can subspecialize in foot and ankle or shoulder. Or knees or something. Yeah.
I think a generalist physical therapist should be able to manage maybe 70-75% of the cases that walk through the doors. But there's a percentage that requires some specialist training.
Lori Tyne, Brody, and Bill Boisenault, our guests as we talk physical therapy here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tell you what, we're having some problems with the news today. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but... That's okay. We will continue on here, and the news, I'm sure, by the time the next newscast rolls around, we will be ready with that newscast. Not sure what happened there, but, you know, just to let you know, the news comes from National Public Radio in Washington and New York sometimes, and it runs by satellite. We have a satellite dish on top of our roof here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And it rolls at 1 minute after 12, whether we're ready or not. And and this time we were ready, but they weren't. So I'm not quite sure what happened. At any rate, we won't worry about it because we've got lots more we can talk about with you here on the Ideas Network. And we'll take some more calls. And you can join us again at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Rex in Marshfield. Hi, Rex. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. They must have just knew my cell phone battery was getting low. I am 40 years old, and I'm a truck driver, and I have a problem. I like working out on an elliptical, but when I'm doing it, my foot gets a little tingly, but when I stop doing it, when I get done exercising, and then it gets really numb, like it falls asleep, and I don't know if that's a... something a physical therapist could help with, or if that's a shoe problem. I tried different shoes, and that doesn't seem to make any difference, but it's just my right foot.
Okay. And then, so when you stop exercising, then it gets worse, is that correct?
Correct.
And then how long does it take for a sensation to come back normal again?
Oh, just like a minute or two.
Okay.
I walk it off a little bit.
Okay. And how long has this been going on, Rex?
Probably a year, I guess. It only does it pretty much then.
Okay.
So it doesn't really bother me, not seriously otherwise.
All right. So you don't get it any of the times after you've been driving for long periods of time or you're, you know, at night?
No, doesn't do that, no.
Okay. All right. Anything else changing in that foot in terms of what the foot looks like, skin changes in that foot?
No, not that I noticed, no.
Okay. Cold foot?
No.
Okay. All right. Because with tingling and numbness associated with it, you think, could it be something vascular in nature? Could it be a nerve that's being irritated a little bit, or a combination of the two? The fact that you can get rid of it so quickly makes me feel a lot better about it. If it was something that was progressive in nature, a nerve that was being compressed, especially over a year, you'd be getting worse and worse and worse. But the fact is, you've had it for almost a year. Was there an injury that brought this on that you can look back to and say this is why it started?
No, but I started exercising about a year ago.
Okay.
It seemed I got a little bit better as I lost some weight.
Okay. So. All right. Well, Rex, here's my recommendation. It doesn't sound like anything serious, the fact that it goes away so quickly, but I recommend seeing a therapist for a visit or two and have them examine you. And, if they have the equipment, I would probably put you on an elliptical trainer or some sort of exercise equipment and have you exercise and then examine you afterward when you've got some of the tingling or the discomfort that you've got. Maybe some certain stretches that you can do before you exercise, or maybe before and after, to help, keep this from getting worse and hopefully getting rid of it. But I would think within a visit or two, the therapist could help you sort out what is the underlying problem that you've got, and is there something they can help you with or not.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault here as we talk physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. And we're ready to take some more calls now here on the Ideas Net. Carol in Onalaska, you are next. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Thank you. About a year and a half ago, I was involved in a rollover automobile accident, and I suffered about a 50% compression fracture of my T7 vertebra. After 3 months in one of those lovely turtle braces, my neurosurgeon considered me fully recovered. However, and I really haven't had a whole lot of difficulty other than struggling constantly with avoiding hunching more, because I'm now a little more curved than I was before. I do experience, when I hold my arms at perpendicular to the floor, such as when I'm standing at my kitchen sink for any extended time, or worse, when I play the piano, and my avocation is piano, and I get it gets to be real severe burning pain in a band across that area at the level of that T7 fracture. I did see a physical therapist after I got out of the brace, and she talked about some general strengthening exercises, but she was a pianist herself, and she was a little concerned that there wasn't a whole lot she thought I might be able to do to specifically strengthen those muscles, and I'm wondering if you might have any additional information.
Yes, I think a couple of thoughts go through my mind here. The activities that you mentioned that worsen your symptoms, hunching over or forward, or when you're bent forward, what that does, even that your fracture's healed. I mean, that's what you've been told, your fracture's healed. But it doesn't mean that the vertebra that was injured is normal. Vertebra normally are shaped like a box, a rectangular box. And when you have a compression fracture, it takes on the shape of like a wedge.
Right.
And that wedge narrows toward the front. And so when we're hunched forward, it puts more pressure on the part of the vertebra that was injured. And when you have that wedge-shaped vertebra, it changes your posture.
Right.
As you stated. And so part of your postural change is structural in nature, which is not going to change. But it just means that you need to be a little more flexible than normal in areas of your spine above and below that T7. And make sure you have good muscle flexibility through your shoulders and also in front of your hips, to help keep your posture as normal as possible, to decrease pressure on T7. And then stabilization exercises, and for your trunk, but also through your shoulder girdle and shoulders in particular, especially as you describe holding your arms out perpendicular to the floor or playing piano. You need more shoulder girdle stability and upper and trunk stability than someone who hasn't had this injury.
Okay.
And so I would think that a therapist now would give you different exercises than you were given when you came out of that brace. And they should examine you from a muscle length and strength standpoint, a postural standpoint, sitting when you're playing the piano. I think this would be a good time to go back and be re-examined.
Oh, okay.
Good. Give it a shot, Carol.
I will try it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Mark in Lake Mills. Hi, Mark.
Hi. My situation has to do with my right arm. I sustained a pretty bad, I was in a pretty bad bike wreck about a year ago. And went to the local urgent care, and they did an X-ray and found that the radial head had been broken. So I had a sling, and they decided not to cast it. I guess that's not the way they do it, or try not to do it. And went to physical therapy, and the physical therapy, I should add, was quite painful, but they insisted that this is the way to go, and I continued on. And finally, after a few months, it just didn't seem to me that it was going very well, and I got a second opinion from an orthopedic surgeon. This was an ER doc who saw me originally. And he said that the original X-rays had been misread and that the fracture hadn't completely healed properly in place. And he referred me to another orthopedic surgeon who said what he was willing to operate and correct it, that is to reposition the radial head with, I guess, metal, I guess. But I've been hesitant to want to go that route. But what's happened since, though, is that I can't completely straighten the arm out.
Right.
And if I ride a motorcycle, this is a bicycle accident, but if I ride a motorcycle, I think the vibrations are making it very sore after 20 minutes, so that's something I really can't do much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then just recently, doing some yard work with an electric hedge clipper, I noticed the arm became very sore on that, that whole area, but it feels more like muscle than bone, mm-hmm. although I don't know that I'd know the difference. Anyway, it's very sore and unpleasant. I don't want to have pins and plates and so forth put in there. I guess I'd rather, go a physical therapy route if that's possible.
Well, let's see. That was how long ago now?
This is just about a year and a month.
Yeah. And how straight does your elbow go? How far are you from straight?
Well, it's pretty close to straight. I don't think that anybody, unless they were, really maybe expert, could even tell. But, I know that it's not straightening out.
Yeah, yeah. That's the biggest problem with injuries around the elbow is they don't like to immobilize them because the elbow gets stiff in a hurry and it's really hard to get it straight. Not knowing the nature of the fracture and how displaced it is, I don't know if physical therapy can improve that. I can't say that. You don't want plates and pins and screws in there.
I think it's probably going to...
Right. To me, if I were to contemplate the surgeries, I would sit down with the surgeon and ask, okay, what are the odds of my getting my full motion back? Because losing motion, can you turn your palm up and down fully?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't do any sort of weightlifting exercise. I think,
but you can turn your palm fully down.
I can turn my palm either way. I can do most, anything. But yeah. It's sore. It seems to get worse with humidity and.
Yeah. Well, that may not change. The humidity and the kind of stiff and achy, that may be degenerative changes. Now, the question is, how displaced is that radial head? And if it's continues to be displaced, are you going to have accelerated degeneration at your elbow?
Well, it couldn't not continue, could it? I mean, it's not going to do any correcting of itself now.
No, but it could continue to progress and worsen. You get to a certain point where you're sort of status quo, where you're in equilibrium. But, for example, if you have a meniscus tear in your knee and you continue to walk and move on it, it will continue, like sandpaper, to grate on your joint surfaces until you're down to bone on bone. So I don't know enough about your fracture and its location and how it's impacting the biomechanics of your elbow joint to tell you whether or not surgery is going to slow the degenerative process at your elbow.
Well, I can say that if I'm turning it, if I'm putting on some sunscreen, for instance, to bicycle, that it makes a tremendous amount of racket, kind of crunching and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's sounds like a lot of degeneration, a lot of Rice Krispies. this is really a discussion you should have with your surgeon.
Yeah.
Sit down with your list of questions, things like, you know, how bad is the degeneration? How much motion am I likely to have afterwards? I mean, you're really looking at how much of a margin you can gain by having the surgery. Is it going to prevent it from getting worse? Is it going to make it better? Is it going to be the same, but it's not going to get any worse beyond that? Huh. You know, those kinds of questions. But I can't say, from what you've told me, that PT alone is going to make it better.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm.
So really no PT?
I can't say that.
Yeah.
I can't say that. I would want to look at your x-rays. I'd want to look at your radiographs and MRI, whatever they've done to really take a look at this fracture and its placement and try to estimate what's happening biomechanically when you move your elbow.
I would agree with Lori. The elbow is such a complex area where the bones are, they're turned, they're twisted, they're angled a little bit. And when you lose that proper alignment and shape of the bones with a fracture like this, it can set you up for some degenerative changes to occur.
Yeah.
Good luck to you, Mark.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to another Mark, this one in Kenosha. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I am a restaurant owner and chef, and I've been working in restaurant kitchens now for probably 25 years. I do a lot of lateral stepping. So, you know, I don't get a lot of heel-toe.
Right.
And in the last year or so, I have been noticing that after a period of time of sitting or when I first wake up in the morning after sleep, both of my Achilles tendons, although my left more so than my right, just completely refuse to work. I can barely put my heel on the floor for about the first half hour that I'm up.
Because it hurts?
It hurts.
Okay.
It feels like somebody took it and tied it in a knot.
Okay. Well, you know that Larry opened the show with this question of new treatments, and I'm sitting here looking at a night splint for plantar fasciitis that Jim brought in. One of the things you could think about is a night splint for your Achilles, especially because you're having so much pain first thing in the morning. Yeah, I certainly agree that you have different biomechanics than the average person does, but I think it'd be reasonable, given how much pain you're having and that this is your vocation, to see somebody and take a look at you. Look at how you move. Look at what kind of changes you may have in your Achilles tendon because of how you move for so many years. You may have shortening. You may excessively pronate. You may hurt in a different place in your tendon than people usually do. And then see about getting you on a treatment program for it. But one thing that you might think about is a night splint.
Now, the night splint you're talking about, is that similar to the one that they use for wrists for carpal tunnel where it has a metal plate that holds the foot at a specific angle?
It does hold the foot at a specific angle. It usually doesn't have metal in it. It can be a soft stocking like a Strasburg sock, or it can be plastic with some foam lining on it. But, yes, it holds your ankle at a fixed angle during the night.
Okay, and do I need to get those through a physician and prescription, or can I get them over the counter?
You can get them over the counter. You can Google it. You can get them online.
If
you look for night splints, you'll see a lot of different options. But I'd see a PT also, just to get on an exercise program. They might be able to talk to you about shoes, surfaces, way to move around your kitchen that might decrease the stress on your Achilles. Because it's one thing to treat it, but then you want to prevent it from coming back by dealing with the source of the problem.
Yep.
I have noticed that if I wear my clogs as opposed to a pair of sneakers, I do have a little bit less of a problem with it the next day, but it's still there.
Yeah. So. It's probably a combination of a higher heel and being backless, so you don't have the friction.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks a lot for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. And Stephanie and Madison, we turn to you now. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Lori and Bill. You guys are phenomenal. I have to really express my appreciation to all of you because this service, this information is so valuable. I learn so much just listening. I'm a very active person, and I've taken a lot of training. I've come very close to becoming a certified massage therapist. Whether that's going to happen is another story, but my heart just went out to these people that were calling in. I've had plantar fasciitis and foot problems, a lot of painful issues, and you guys mm-hmm. were so helpful. So this is kind of going to pale in comparison, but it still hurts like the devil when I get them. I get Charlie horses at night, not real often, but I will wake up and I will get them in my calves mm-hmm. And sometimes up in my quadriceps, and they hurt like the dickens. And can you tell me what the deal is? Is it I'm 57 years old. I'm pretty active. I'm on my feet a lot, which doesn't bother me. And I just, oh, boy, when they come on, they hurt.
Okay. Stephanie, how long have you been having the problems with the Charlie horses?
You know, I'd say the last year or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in terms of frequency, you know, the last month compared to 5-6 months ago?
Probably once a month at the max.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So not real frequent. I understand.
No.
They're not fun when they happen, but it's not happening every night or five,
no.
six nights a week.
No,
okay.
No.
All right.
No.
And
twice a month at the very most.
Okay. And once you get the Charlie horses, how quickly can you get rid of them?
Relatively quickly. What I'll do, now it's funny, I haven't had them for years, and I got them when I was pregnant. I learned to push my, with the ones in my calf, I would push my heel really hard into the bed, and that would usually get rid of them relatively quickly.
Okay.
The ones up in my thigh, I mean, I've got them in my inner thigh, my, you know, outer thigh, you know, those are a little harder, but
well, the fact they happen so infrequently, you know, there's lots of reasons that can give you this type of cramping and degree of cramping at night. It could be something that's dietary in nature, something vascular in nature, other systemic types of conditions. It could be related to activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just excessive activity on a particular day, and the muscles are fatigued and they cramp up during the course of the night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, the fact that they have it so frequently makes me less concerned about it being something medical that's underlying the Charlie horses that you get once or twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do any kind of stretching or strengthening exercises for your legs routinely?
I actually need to do that because I want to avoid any problems with plantar fasciitis.
Mm-hmm.
I just have like a slight amount of numbness at the very back of bottom of my heel right now. But no, I don't.
I would think so. A good, a gentle stretching program for your calves,
mm-hmm.
for your quads, and for your
mm-hmm.
hamstrings
mm-hmm.
Could go a long way to getting rid of these Charlie horses for you.
Okay.
And by gentle, I mean you should think of coaxing as opposed to stretching. Don't bounce when you stretch, and hold the stretch for a good 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and a couple repetitions.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can work that into a daily routine or close to daily routine, I think that could help you.
Right.
You know, and if that doesn't, you know, a month or 2 months from now, if they're becoming more frequent, more severe, that's when I would go see your physician and have them take a look at you and examine you and see if they come up with a different idea for you.
Can I just add something really quick?
Sure.
I think that it happens mostly on my left leg. Now, I have a weird kind of thing going on, blind in my right eye, and I think I tend to favor my left side somewhat. I put a little more pressure on my left side.
Yeah.
So maybe, I'm wondering, maybe it is stress-related, maybe just...
Yeah. Overuse, yeah. You know, but the other thing about a good strengthening program is strengthening programs increase your vascularity or an aerobic kind of activity for your legs, such as bicycling or swimming with fins or something like that, because it'll increase the vascularization, increase the capillary network so that at night, you know, when you're resting and you don't have as much circulation through your legs, you'll have an increased capillary network where maybe it won't happen. So there is some rationale to that kind of a program to reduce cramps, although it's a slow process.
Yeah. So would you say, there's something I didn't quite catch. You said that mine aren't happening that often. It's not like a real, you know, it's the amount of times that they're happening isn't something to be really alarmed about at this point, correct?
Right.
Yeah, okay. I would agree with that. In terms of thinking that something vascular or something with your kidneys or
right.
or something like that.
A claudication, a cardio problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Monica in Wanakee, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, thank you for this program.
Sure.
I fell on the ice in February, hit my knee. It was swollen black and blue. In a month or so, it was just fine. But April came along, and I was playing basketball with my granddaughter, and I shouldn't have, but anyway, I kind of was cutting on that leg, and now it's hurt ever since. It hurts when I flex it completely. It's stiff after I sit or sleep. Can I stretch my way out of this?
Where does it hurt? Is it when you fell on it, did you land in front or
front? Whole kneecap and, you know, down the inside part was very bruised and swollen for a while.
Okay, and then between that time and the basketball incident, pretty
fine.
Good. And then when you played basketball, did you have any kind of pop? Anything when you said you pushed off that knee? Anything that happened?
It was fine until the next day or so.
And the next day or so. And what, did it swell? Or it just
didn't
feel stiff?
Anything, it just hurt.
It just hurt. Okay.
My knee hurt. And it's still tight in the back.
Okay. Well, a couple things. The tightness in back makes me think that you have a little bit of arthritis in that knee.
Sure.
And when you kind of did the quick maybe stop and direction change playing basketball, that you got that arthritis stirred up a little bit.
Okay.
That would give you that stiffness thing in back.
Okay.
The thing to think about is that if you have some arthritis in your knee, you probably have some arthritis underneath your kneecap. You landed on your kneecap, and it was kind of like you taking 5 years off your tires when you spin them out at a stop sign. So when you landed on it, you took a few years off the cartilage on your kneecap. And basketball also, with that starting, stopping, and sideways motion, puts a lot of stress on your kneecap.
Okay.
That really wouldn't make it stiffen back, but it'd make it hurt in front. So you could have both those things going on where you just got your arthritis stirred up. Can you stretch your way out of it? Probably.
Okay.
Probably ice, I'd get off of it in terms of doing repetitive weight-bearing stuff like a lot of walking or a lot of squatting. I'd avoid a lot of direction change or sideways movements. I'd get in a pool if I could.
Okay.
Keep icing it every day. And you should be heading in the right direction in a couple, 3 weeks of that. If not, go see your doctor.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You bet. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Monica in Appleton, you have a quick one.
Hello and thank you. I'm 78 years old. I have experienced since April a tingling in four fingers of my right hand, not the little finger. I'm told that it could be coming from the spine. When I sleep at night and I lay on that arm on the right side, it's like the hand falls asleep.
Right.
What?
All right. What do we got
Monica,
there?
Do you get the tingling at other times besides the night, or is it only at night?
No, it's all day long.
It is all day long.
And at night, but it gets worse at night.
Okay. All right. Well, it could be related to your neck. Those four fingers, the thumb and those three fingers are associated with certain nerves that come out of the neck area. And so it certainly is possible that that's where the problem is coming from. Have you seen somebody examine your neck and giving you some treatment for it?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, that would be my recommendation because it sounds like it's not getting any better. And you don't want it to turn into numbness and weakness. So I'd recommend that you get examined and be put on a good rehabilitation program. And the therapist should examine your neck all the way down to your fingertips and see what they can come up with for you.
Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bill and Lori, thank you. Time flew again.
It did. We have a new diagnosis to add to our list, Summerfest Knee.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. We're going to remember that one.
We'll see you in about a month or so.
Sure.
Sounds good.
All right, sounds great. Lori Tide Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine Center. And Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the University of Wisconsin Medical School, our guests, and they'll be back in about a month, and we'll talk some more with them about physical therapy issues. We're going to turn our attention to pets on tomorrow's program, and Mike Hoffer will be our guest. Mike is owner and manager of Hoffer's Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee, And so the when we have him on, we typically spend more time on the birds and the fish and things like that. So we'll look forward to that and look forward to you listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.